In Syria, over 400 civilians have been killed in eastern Ghouta since Sunday, a rebel-held area outside of Damascus. The forces of President Bashar al-Assad have been bombing the territory backed by Russian aircraft. This is one of just a few rebel strongholds left in Syria. 7 years of war and destruction in that country. More than 5.4 million Syrians have fled the country since the civil war began, according to the United Nations. In some cases, pulled by the hope of safety elsewhere, in most cases pushed out of their homes by bombs or bullets or secret police.
No one leaves easily. They leave perhaps their communities, their properties, their families, their friends, their homeland, everything they've ever known, to throw themselves into a future that's profoundly, profoundly uncertain.
That's Wendy Perlman, a professor at Northwestern University. Between 2012 and 2016, Wendy Perlman spoke with over 300 Syrian refugees. She used their stories to piece together a picture of Syria. It became the book, We Crossed a Bridge and It Trembled, Voices from Syria. It was published last year. I spoke with Wendy Perlman about what life is like for millions of Syrian refugees as the violence continues inside their country.
What people are suffering is beyond words. The bloodshed, the death, and this comes after years of siege and starvation, a population that's already been strangled, that has endured more than any human being should have to endure. Now, in addition, enduring horrific airstrikes that are bombing families, that are bombing hospitals. It's a siege whose horror and terror is just horrific, and it's happening before the eyes of the world, and it's happened before.
Now, in your interviews in your book, Wendy, you met a character, a man, Anas, who's a doctor, who comes from Eastern Ghouta. Where did you meet him, and what did he tell you his life was like in that town, east of Damascus?
Yeah, so I met Anas in Turkey, where he's now working as a doctor again. He's from Eastern Ghouta, and he talked to me about his life before 2011, the kind of fear and silence that many Syrians experienced under a brutal authoritarian regime that used surveillance, undercover informants, corruption, co-optation to maintain a system that was fundamentally unfree. He also talked to me about how he went out in protests in early 2011, like hundreds of thousands of other Syrians, millions, calling for freedom, for dignity, for political change. And he told me about a particular protest in April 2011 in which huge, huge crowds came out in Eastern Ghouta and throughout the Damascus suburbs. And he said to me that this huge crowd of people calling for freedom were going from town to town and at one point crossed a bridge. And he said, we crossed a bridge and it trembled under the weight of so many people, that show of people's power. For me, it was such a powerful image that I made it the title of the book.
Yes.
It reminds us of the power of people's power that happened in Eastern Ghouta, the same places that's on our TV screens today, also happened throughout Syria. And it's important to remember because as we see the siege now and the horror and the war and the killing and the bodies and the sheer terror, it's important to remember that this conflict began a popular uprising calling for freedom. It began with popular protests. That memory should not be buried along with the dead.
You spoke with hundreds of refugees for your book. Why are most people picking up and fleeing their country to Europe and elsewhere?
Many, many people flee, leaving for their very lives. I talked to people who fled in the middle of the night, who fled with nothing but the clothes on their back, who fled even without their very papers to identify who they are and what they had experienced in life and their degrees and so forth, and then suffer for that later on when they have no paperwork to try to start their life anew. People flee bombs. There are people who flee because they are at risk of being arrested. And Syrians would say to me again and again, you know, you wish that you would die by a bomb or a bullet rather than be arrested and thrown in a regime prison where there's a slow death of torture, of starvation, of disease, of overcrowding. There are others who maybe are coming from areas that have not come under bombardment, who maybe are not at risk of arrest, but see no future in the country, in a place where the economy's collapsed, where inflation is skyrocketing, where no one knows what will happen. There are others who come from safer circumstances, but also decide to leave the country.
Well, your book has so many personal stories of people who fled. Tell the story of Bushra, one of many characters who wound up living in tents, of course, in refugee camps.
Yeah. So Bushra is someone I met actually in Lebanon, where the situation of refugees is really terrible. There are no official UN refugee camps in Lebanon. Instead, hundreds of thousands of Syrians are living in informal tent settlements. They basically have a tent, you know, in any empty field, maybe rent it from a landlord by the meter. So there are small settlements of a dozen or a few dozen tents scattered throughout the country. And that's more difficult because in a formal refugee camp, as horrific as that is too, there's often space to have a clinic or a school. So these informal tent settlements throughout Lebanon have a different type of challenges. So Bushra was talking about how her young daughter, her tent was the only kind of home she'd ever known that she could remember. So Bushra talked about how once she went to a women's center where she was doing some activities, and it was a real building with real walls. And her daughter was so excited to be in a place where there was real walls that she said, Mom, take a picture of me next to the wall, as if it were something remarkable to document.
Wendy, what about the future for so many people who fled? What do people feel like the future of Syria is, and do they see themselves as having any role in it? Not only returning, maybe returning to the country, but being able to get a life back in Syria.
It's hugely uncertain. And even in the course of doing my interviews, I've seen this change over time. When I first began interviewing Syrians in 2012, those who'd fled the country, everybody had their bags packed. Everyone said, you know, we're going to go home any moment now. I would talk to people who said, you know, I'm not going to buy a can opener or dishes because I have that back home and I'm going back home. People expected to return to Syria really at any moment. The next summer, when I continued with interviews in 2013, I could see that hope or that confidence of returning beginning to fade and people beginning to think, wow, maybe this exile will be more permanent. People that I met in Jordan, Lebanon, and Turkey were beginning to think, you know, there are rumors of people getting to Europe. That was 2013. By 2015, many of the same people I'd interviewed were already in Europe. They were learning Swedish or learning German, getting their paperwork done, trying to think about how to restart life from zero. So while many people continue to hold in their heart the hope that they will return to their homeland, to the land that they love, and recreate the communities that are now shattered and scattered, given the sheer passage of time, many people have no choice but to look forward and provide for themselves and their families. That's the reality after 7 years of war and millions of people displaced.
Wendy Perlman, professor and author of We Crossed a Bridge and It Trembled, Voices from Syria. Wendy Perlman, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.